I want everybody to know that I am taking full credit for what happened last night at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. I'm taking full credit for it. It was all me. And the reason it was all me is because way too often when I go to a game and we lose, somebody says, oh, it's your fault. You shouldn't have gone to the game. So when they do rally like they did last night, the way that was something, huh? How about that 4-3 win for Atlanta United? You know, I don't want to say this early in the year it was a season saver, but man, did they need that. And, you know, making the lineup change at halftime, and you're like, okay, Saba's on the other side, and then they switched around Miggy, and you're like, okay, and then bang, bang, two goals, and you're like, okay, that didn't work. All right, let's leave. And it's like, no, let's just hang. Suddenly there's, oh, it's 3-2, then it's 3-3, then it's 4-3. And to see New York City, the goaltender, the keeper, and the defenders screaming and pointing fingers at each other like Spider-Man, like a Spider-Man meme after Latte's last goal. That was hilarious. So congrats to Atlanta United, shot in the arm. You know, it's the first time they won in like 2 months, so they needed to win, and a big 3 points for them last night. All right, welcome to the show. Live today from the Kia Studios. This is one of those super short Sunday shows because we have NCAA basketball and the Hawks tonight. Right here on the radio station, John Fricke with you on this Sunday morning. Of course, you want to weigh in on the Hawks, you're always welcome to. We'll talk Sweet 16 and get the reactions to those wins yesterday. Florida with a come-from-behind win, and then, boy, did Duke look good last night. Whew, man. Man, oh mercy. I mean, the ACC as a whole is not very good. Duke? Oh, that's separate. It's like Duke and the ACC. It'd be Duke, and then be like, oh, there's the rest of the ACC. Sorry, Noel. Noel White's a fan of a team that I don't really care for much, but it's, look, if you ever been in their stadium, okay, and if you ever been in the Dean Dome, when you walk in, your first reaction is, oh, wow, this place is huge, because it's like 22,000, I mean, it's a huge, gigantic, okay? It's like State Farm with another level on it. And then the second reaction you have is, huh, well, if Pepto-Bismol were blue, this would be the color of Pepto-Bismol blue. That's what it looks like.
It is kind of like the powder blue equivalent, isn't it?
It's coated with, like, oh, somebody drank a whole bunch. It's like they took a spray paint gun the size of Detroit and went everywhere. It's like, is there anything that is, oh, okay, this little patch of brown, okay, that's it. You know, oh, the rims are orange. And everything else is powder blue. The chairs, the tables, the seats, the railings, the scoreboard. It's like, anyway. So there's Duke, and there's everybody else. And we'll get into it with Deshaun Tate, our college basketball expert. He'll look back at the two games yesterday. Look forward to those two games today, and I know a lot of fans that are in town for Michigan State and Auburn. I wish both of you teams, you know, the very best. Regular season champs, you know, and the SEC and the Big Ten showing off here. Michigan State fans, Sparty fans, and Deshaun, by the way, just full thing, you know, we're transparent here. Deshaun Tate, our college basketball expert, is a Michigan State fan. Also full transparency. I'm not a Michigan State fan, but I do have a tie to Michigan State. My cousin was an assistant coach for Judd Heathcote on the 1979 national championship, the Magic Johnson, you know, team. So they played against Larry Bird in Utah, and he was an assistant coach on that team. So I have some Michigan State family tie, though I have never rooted for Sparty, so get over yourself if you think that family tie makes me pro-Michigan State. It doesn't. Doesn't make me pro-Michigan. I don't like them either, so don't worry about it, okay? I went to Nebraska, and currently I'm up in Indiana where my wife went to school. So, I mean, when it comes to the Big Ten, yeah, this is Michigan is not really on our radar, okay? Anybody in Michigan is not on our radar. So we'll get to Sean in here, and he'll talk a little bit about what he thought about yesterday. And I'll give you his thoughts here about the games today, and we'll see what happens with the teams like, you know, Auburn and Michigan State and Houston, and we'll get into all of that and see what we're going to get for a Final Four in San Antonio. Meantime, we can talk about United as well. That was a hell of a win, one of the better ones to come from behind like that, down 3-1, and you win. I mean, you're down 3-1. If you get a point, you're like, yeah. No, they won the game. And that says a lot about, you know, maybe the fortitude of the team. Maybe that's a little turning point for them. We can certainly get into the Hawks because tonight, big game, Hawks and Bucks. And I go, Dow Jones, well, everybody Dow Jones is with the Hawks because the Hawks are a Dow Jones. I don't know if I'm bullish or bearish or bullish or bearish or bullish. I mean, They looked like 3 games ago that they were going to be able to make maybe a little late season run and lock down the number 7 seed, which is really important, by the way, to lock down that number 7 seed, because then you only have to win once and you get that playing game at home. And now they've fallen behind Orlando, and if they're not careful with 9 games to go and they don't get their act together, they could slide down to 9 or 10. Now, does it really matter? Because they're not going to win the NBA title this year, even if they make the – but I think you kind of want to make the Final Eight. You know, I'd like to see them play Boston or something. I think it'd be good for the team if they did, even if they didn't win the series. I still think it'd be a positive for the franchise. So in that regard, yeah, okay. I'd still like them to, you know, they're going to obviously make the play-in, but you want to – it's like, you know, the first – what are the games in Dayton? You want to make the big tournament. And the NCAA can walk around and go, you know, those teams like North Carolina, which was one of them, those teams are in the tournament. They're not the first four teams, are those eight teams, they're not outside the tournament. They're in the – nobody believes that, okay? You can say it all you want, but it's like you got to play your way in. Well, you know, if you win that game, then you get a thing where you say you won an NCAA tournament game. Okay, sure. All right, yep, you know, thumbs up. All right, I'll walk with you on that. Then we got to get into your Braves and your Falcons. And that's probably what we'll spend, even though it's a short show, do a little Sweet 16 Hawks talk, and then we'll get into the Braves and the Falcons. There's more on you-know-who for the Falcons. One of the major national media people, I was really railing on them yesterday for a good reason, by the way. And the good reason is the national media, of which I was a part of forever, sometimes they live in a bubble, okay? So the best thing I could tell you about working with these people and knowing these people is the bubble in New York and the bubble in L.A. And the bubble, I used to fight against the bubble in New York. I used to fight against the bubble in L.A. And there were different bubbles. The New York bubble is that the only thing that matters is pro sports, and the only thing that really matters of pro sports is what happens in an area between Boston, like a triangle, Boston, Chicago, and Washington, D.C. And then outside of that, it doesn't matter. Oh, maybe occasionally L.A. Then the rest of the flyover country, it doesn't matter. They couldn't care. They give lip service to college sports up there, but they don't know college sports. They're like, huh? What's college football? Nobody cares. I mean, that's what they really think. I mean, now L.A. gets college football because you got USC, and you got, well, UCLA didn't really count, but I mean, they're there. I mean, the gulf of difference between USC and UCLA is ginormous, okay? It's not like Auburn and Alabama. It's not even like Georgia or Clemson and South Carolina. It's like, I don't know, I don't want to demean it. It's like Tennessee and Vanderbilt, okay? That's the gulf. I mean, UCLA is Vandy and USC is Tennessee. You know, it's a huge difference between the two. But at least they understand college football, and USC is, you know, maybe the third most popular team behind the Lakers and Dodgers in all of Southern California. USC football, whether you realize it or not, is huge in L.A. It's huge. I mean, there are more USC fans than there are Rams fans. I'm telling you that right now. And Chargers fans don't count, okay? I'm sorry, they don't. USC football is huge. So they at least get college football out there. But in L.A., what happens is the bubble that they get into is – again, all about they're in the same trap as New York. They live in I guess you could call it like a LeBron bubble, okay, for lack of a better term, or a Shohei bubble. They live in this world of superstars matter, and so that's what they focus on is all the top line stuff, all right, you know, and I understand it's national media and you want to focus on the big national stories. So if it's, you know, and who's making the big national news? New York and LA, right? So that's what they focus on, the top line stuff. And they don't pay any attention to Atlanta until they have to turn their attention to Atlanta. And so when they turn their attention to Atlanta, because something happens down here, like Kirk Cousins, they get it wrong because they haven't been paying attention. Odds are most of the national media is not even aware that there was a meeting between Kirk Cousins and Arthur Blank, let alone what happened in that meeting. So they have no context for making some of the analysis and opinions that they have, and they get it all wrong. That's why I was, you know, kind of harping on it yesterday. Mike Florio was one of the people that got it wrong. Well, today on Pro Football Talk, Florio's kind of stepped back from that a little bit. He's kind of like, I'll read it to you. But it's like, oh, Maybe somebody got in your grill there, Mike, and said, hey, Mike, you might want to pay attention to what's really going on. Because his latest thing that he put up yesterday sort of says, oh, I'm starting to see where there might be some way the Falcons might actually have some leverage here.
Really? And I know that pained him because he is very clear he does not like this organization. So I know that that slight retraction pained him so.
Yeah. So we'll get into that a little bit later on. And, of course, then we'll get into your Braves. And I was just talking to Grant. It's so great to see Grant in studio. I haven't seen Grant in a long, as they say in the South, Coons age. I haven't seen Grant in a long time. And it was great to see him. By the way, he looks good. Well, you know that. You see him on TV. He's a big star. So it was great to see Grant and to shake his hand and have a chance to chat him up for 15 or 20 minutes, and it was good to see him again. So anyway, the Braves here, I think you fall into two camps. It's, 0-3, no big deal. It's 3 of 162. Or you're in the camp of, not going to lie, got a little concern about a couple of things because some of the things from last year are starting to rear their head again. The inability to have clutch hits here was a problem last year. Now, having said all that, with the slow start and the kind of blasé attitude of the team last year and the inability to get what seems like clutch hits and all of what we went through last year, that team still won 89 games and made the playoffs, okay? So our bar is so high here, but you can't be going out there getting swept by the Padres. No offense, the Padres are a 500 ball club, and you can't get swept by them to start the season. Now, in 2021, somebody pointed out, hey, they had that Phillies thing. They were 0-4. They won the World Series. Yeah, okay, yeah, they did. So it's about getting hot in the fall, and I get that. And so, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't be a little concerned. The bullpen is a concern. The starting pitching has been great. I mean, starting pitching is everything you want it to be. The rest of the club is kind of like, okay, kind of working through stuff, And so you can't just sit around here if you're the Braves and go, we're going to get Ronald back because if you heard Alex Anthopoulos with me last Wednesday night when he broke that little bit of news that Ronald might be a little bit farther away than people think, and the reason isn't that he won't be ready by the end of the month. I didn't ask him this, but I don't mean to put words in his mouth, but I'm just going to take this. And Grant would probably shake his head yes. The reason is they're going to slow roll this with Acuna because this is time number two, and they don't want to be in a position where they're, we talked about this, having to rework Ronald and put him in and make him, a DH or something, or put him in left field part-time and DH part-time because they're too afraid to put him out on the base paths running for 70 stolen bases or in right field full-time. So they're going to slow roll this with Ronald just to make sure, because Ronald wants to come back, be the leadoff hitter, play right field, and steal bases. Okay, but that means we're going to take a little bit more time to make sure you're 100-100, and then we'll let you loose one more time. And then after that, if it happens again, we'll revisit that again, and that's when we rework Ronald. They're going to have to, So, but anyway, I don't want to even think about that. That does not make me a happy camper. It's not a positive, and I want to be positive about the team. And so I'm stuck in between, three games of 162, and not going to lie, I'm a little concerned. And so I'll ask you about that a little bit later in the show, too. All right, so Deshaun Tate's going to jump into the program next. He's our college basketball expert. What he thought of the Florida comeback, what he saw from Duke. Can anybody beat Duke? Yeah, there's one team I think that could beat Duke, and that's Auburn. What makes you think Auburn could beat him? Alabama beat Auburn, blah, blah, blah. Okay, stop. You don't understand how long and big Duke is and how the matchup didn't favor Alabama to begin with. But we'll let him tell you that. As we look forward to the games today, good luck to Michigan State and Auburn today. Michigan State fans do know it will be an Auburn home crowd, okay? Because, it's like you guys playing in Detroit, right? About the same distance. All right, quick break, and Deshaun Tate next on this Sunday morning with John Furkey on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Sports Radio 99 The Game on a Sunday morning. Busy day in the radio station. I have a very short show taking you to 1 o'clock today and pregame coverage of the Elite Eight, game two of the Elite Eight. Day two, which starts with Tennessee and Houston. And that will be in Indianapolis. And we will have the Tennessee-Houston game, the Vols and the Cougars, live for you right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Coverage begins at 2. That will be Tennessee and Houston facing the Duke Blue Devils in the Final Four, winner of that game. The second game today at State Farm Arena between Michigan State and Auburn will be on the radio on our sister station, 1380 News and Talk WAOK, for that game because we're going to be carrying the Hawks and the Bucks tonight. Beginning at 6:30 with Steve Holman on the call. All right, our college basketball expert, our tournament expert is DeShawn Tate at Tate's Take. I'm going to do it again. I almost said sports. Tate's. Because I'm so used to saying it, DeShawn.
Tate's. Tongue twister.
Tate's Take Hoops. Hoops, not sports. Hoops. Tate's Take Hoops. Yeah, you should just get a new one. Like, you know.
I know.
Hoop Guru or something.
I've heard that a couple times. And listen, Bucks over Sparty, are you – Hawks and Bucks over Sparty, are you kidding me?
Well, we are the Hawks flagship station.
I'm just teasing.
We're not the Michigan State affiliate here.
I wouldn't be me if I didn't, John Freaky.
Oh, well, all right. That's a note to Mike Conley. Mike, drop the Hawks and the five-year contract. Let's go with Michigan State affiliate, all right? And everybody will be locked in on that early season Michigan State-Ferris State game in East.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, sure. So let's begin with yesterday and your reaction, the Florida game. Saw a bunch of people were tweeting out in the under eight, oh, look at the SEC. The SEC sucks. Texas Tech is going to win. I was like, oh, that happened. You guys got a little bit ahead of your skis, didn't you?
It's not that it wasn't that easy, John. And listen, I mean, we talked about it before how Texas Tech was, you know, one of those teams that's probably the least talked about that were still remaining in this tournament. I think ultimately what kind of did them in was, you know, the free throw differential. Obviously, some of the rebounding as well. You're not going to beat many teams, especially a number one seed in such a great Florida team that had been, you know, so good all year and so forth. By making, 50-something percent of your free throws. So I think that kind of hurt them. And ultimately, what kind of kept them in the game a little bit was, you know, the Florida Gators, you know, the turnovers and things of that nature. And listen, Texas Tech still keeping that same motto, if you will, and that same identity that they always have, even going all the way back to when Chris Beard was still there, of you know, hard-nosed defense and things like that. And you know, I mean, listen, when you got those guards, you got Will Clayton. I mean, not a great game from Richard and, you know, not a great game from Elijah Martin either. The experienced guards that we always talk about, what it takes in order to win games in advance, surviving in advance, that was probably the most impressive thing, is that you got guys with experience from going to Final Fours and playing on elite levels and things like that. And then lastly, and this is why I don't blame a lot of people who decided to take Florida to win a national championship and get back to where they once were, is Alex Condon, who they rely on so much in the front court, didn't really have a great game either. So, I mean, Todd Golden, you talk about the job that he has done in a very short span of time over there in Gainesville has been, I mean, I can't name too many coaches who've been able to duplicate that in a 2-3 year span or whatever that it's been. Give him some credit. I know people in this market don't necessarily may want to hear it, but you got to tip your cap to the Florida Gators on this one to be able to do it in the fashion that they did it and to be able to come back. And sometimes these seeds don't really tend to be and we haven't seen a ton of really tight games in this tournament either. It just gets more difficult as you advance, and surviving advance is the name of the game.
Yeah, I think it's a good point about Todd Golden. Everybody kind of focuses in on, hey, Calipari got Arkansas to the dance, and Rick Pitino did what he did, though St. John's bought out early, and Pat Kelsey at Louisville with that turnaround to miss what Todd Golden has done down in Gainesville. But to your point, Florida, which is a team that doesn't necessarily, I mean, Richard, obviously, and Condon, you mentioned, it's not that they don't have really good players, but which they obviously do. It's just not, they're not a team that is a, you know, one or two star team and got a bunch of role guys. They have the luxury of having some of their key players have off games and somebody else. But if somebody else steps up, and Clayton was that guy yesterday, boy, he played great.
No, he did. I mean, unless you start talking about, you know, 30 points and shooting the ball really well. And, you know, it's interesting to see that you have some of these teams that, you know, the best player, or who, first of all, we don't know who the best player is on all of these teams sometimes, but even sometimes in situations where the best player doesn't always play the best, You know, you have other guys that can step up. I mean, we're talking about a situation where, you know, we don't know who Michigan State's best player is. How about when Jani Broome went down earlier in the season and, you know, they were still able to still string together and put together some wins? Duke was in that same situation without Cooper Flagg. And, you know, so, I mean, the list goes on and on. I mean, these are real basketball teams, I feel like. So maybe we don't have the name recognition that some people are a little bit upset about in college basketball this year. I get it. You have Cooper Flagg at the top of that list, expected to win National Player of the Year. And then you have Jani Broome just underneath that. But outside of that, you ask me who's the third guy that would be on that wooden watch list for maybe a National Player of the Year, and I wouldn't really be able to tell you who that is. I probably watch more college basketball than just about anybody. So, I mean, you may not have the name recognition, but you definitely have the teams. We could potentially be talking about having all number one seeds in the Final Four, first time that that's happened since 2008, which was the only time that that had happened.
Deshaun Watson is our college basketball expert.
Did I do it again?
Deshaun Tate. Oh,
totally,
my God.
By the way,
Deshaun, I've only known Deshaun Tate for 15 years,
maybe? Yeah, something like that, yeah.
I can't believe I did that.
Like I said, John,
you know why
totally
that happened? It has nothing to do with your first name, okay? It happened because I'm an old guy. Okay? No, you're not teasing. And you're right. You know? At least I didn't call you Earl Watson.
I can live with that. Good ball player.
He was. UCLA.
Yep.
All right. So anyway, I can't believe it. Deshaun Tate, our college basketball expert. You know, one of the things Duke did really smart yesterday, Duke is a really long athletic team. Alabama's not. And Mark Sears, mm-hmm. if he has a problem, he's 5'10". And when you put Cooper Flagg on a switch on him, Mark Sears is not getting a shot off. And so Duke's defense just went in lockdown mode yesterday. And Alabama, after the 25 three-pointers against BYU, had nowhere to go. I mean, they couldn't get open. And, you know, occasionally, like early in the second half, they got a couple of threes, you know, and rather early in the first half, they were down big, got a couple of threes. And then Duke kind of made a switch. Duke shut them down. And it was, you know, you could say to me anything you want about how Duke, you know, runs their offense very efficiently, which they do, and they shoot the ball well and all that kind of stuff. But that defense yesterday at Duke, to shut that team down, I hope you bet the under, because Alabama couldn't get nothing going.
Yeah, definitely. And I don't think we all kind of knew. We talked about this before, John, that Alabama wasn't going to. When we saw them shoot the way that they shot in that Sweet 16 matchup, we know that they weren't going to, you know, shoot like that. I'm not sure if I felt like they wouldn't come remotely close to that, like, at all. I wouldn't have said that they would have shot 25% from three, but you know, this is a Duke team that, I mean, you take yourself back to some of the older Duke teams, and that's what they predicated a lot of their success on, was on the defensive side. They're getting on the ground, they're, you know, slapping the floor, and they're getting turnovers, creating turnovers and all of these different things. And this is what this Duke team kind of reminds me of a little bit. They're not exactly that, you know, per se, but I think one of the more impressive things about this was the fact that, obviously, they have more balance between offense and defense, and Alabama's more, they're not as defensively disciplined as this Duke team is. And, you know, it's impressive the fact that Duke doesn't really have, like, a ton of bigs to throw out there at you in the front court. And the way that they handled Alabama's bigs and size and athleticism and all of those different things, a bigger team, I mean, to even outscore them in the paint 40-28, I think, was – something else that was, you know, really impressive that Duke put together as well. And so Malawach, obviously a big piece to that team. I'll tell you what, I don't know, we watch a lot of Atlanta Hawks basketball and things like that. Keep your eyes on this guy who's expected to be maybe a top five, certainly lottery pick if he comes out this year. And Duke's center, Malawach, kind of reminds me of Clint Capela a little bit, a much taller version, a little bit more size, but definitely is a defensive anchor in the middle, is able to block some shots. He rebounds really hard. Maybe not a ton of offense, but he cleans up very well when it's a rarity that Cooper Flagg misses a shot or somebody else, or Con Knuppel for that matter. And give some credit to Con Knuppel. Coming into the year, we all talked about Cooper Flagg, and Con Knuppel started to, you know, generate some traction and some steam, talking about how great of a pure jump shooter he is. I heard some comparisons to the name J.J. Redick, which I think was a bit of a reach. But yet still, he could put the ball on the floor pretty well to be a guy who's a pure shooter as well. So they've got it clicking. They're going. You know, this is their 18th Final Four, I think it is. And so Duke is just doing Duke things. And we always pointed the finger at, you know, the coach for the reason behind why they hadn't got to this point in a small, short, sample size window since Coach K retired at the coaching John Shire. He you can't make those, you know, point those same fingers at him for not being able to get to this point anymore, being outcoached.
Right. And so, you know, they are, look, I think right now it's Florida, you know, is going to try and, you know, face off against maybe, you know, Michigan State or Auburn. But if you're Tennessee and Houston, you got to focus in on today. You cannot look ahead. And it's hard not to, because you're going,
yeah.
Right now, if there's a team playing at the highest level, it's, even though I picked Auburn to win it, we'll see what they do today. Team playing at the highest level, it's Duke. I mean, they're playing at the highest level than anybody in the nation. And they've got everything in their game, in their arsenal going, because I expected a knockdown dragout with Alabama. And I think we saw that, you know, kind of late first half. That game was trending towards, you know, 86-84. And look at how it ended up. I mean, just lockdown. All right, Tate, yeah. We're going to take a break here. And then when we get back, I'm going to get your thoughts on the two games today and break a little ground here, see if you can stay. I know who you picked. I'm going to see if you stay with them.
Okay, sounds good. Let's do it.
All righty. So Deshaun Tate, our college basketball expert, is going to be joining us for another segment. We'll take a quick break, get his thoughts on the two games, including Tennessee and Houston, and the Michigan State-Auburn game down at State Farm Arena. What does he think? Who's going to win next? Right here on Sports Radio 99. Elite Eight has Atlanta connections all over the place. First game, Tennessee against Houston, 2 o'clock coverage live on Sports Radio 92 on the game. And then State Farm Arena for Michigan State Auburn. That game will be on our sister station, News and Talk 1380 WAOK, only because we have Hawks and Bucks tonight here on the station beginning at 6:30 for the Hawks and the Bucks. We'll talk a little bit about that with Deshaun Tate in just a moment here. Tate's Take Hoops is where he's at on the X, and he joins us to talk a little bit. All right, let's Deshaun go into these two games today. I know what to expect. This is where you fill in a blank for me. I know what to expect from Tennessee. I've seen them play quite a bit. Houston, I haven't seen play a lot. My assumption is that Rick Barnes wants to keep this game in the 60s. How does Tennessee beat the Cougars today?
I think first things first, John, is they've got to bring that grown man mentality, you know, because Houston has real adults over there. So, I mean, this is those moments when you're out there, you know, trying to, you know, make dreams come true and all those kind of things. You're in the driveway as a young kid and the toughness that comes along with that. And, you know, you got to be willing to crash the boards. You cannot allow them to out-tough you. And if you're Tennessee, I mean, that's kind of been your motto for such a long time since Rick Barnes appeared on campus. And I think that, you know, a lot of that is going to start with the guard play, where you really need Zakai Ziegler to kind of put the clamps down a little bit and be able to stay on the floor. I think there's far too many instances sometimes where he gets to a point where he gets in foul trouble, he gets a little bit excited and get to swing his arms at the ball, and the next thing you know, they're blowing the whistles. LJ Cryer is really, really good. And he has some NCAA tournament experience, some successful ones as well. He's won a national championship over at Baylor, I think, when he was a freshman. So he's a transfer, obviously. And, you know, they've got a tough team. You know, they're not the tallest team in the world, talking about the Houston Cougars. But between Sharp and Uzan and Roberts and Arsenal, they've got guys. Now, they go pretty deep extensively a little bit on their bench, but they don't necessarily bring a lot of offensive production off the bench. So Tennessee has probably more of a balance of being able to provide some more offense to go with the defense probably than Houston does. Houston's already been tested, though. We can't necessarily say all the same things about Tennessee per se. Although they've been banging on this door for quite some time. I really do believe that adjustments have to be made by the head coach at Tennessee, Rick Barnes, because there are some moments where he can be vulnerable and potentially outcoached. It should be interesting.
Tennessee and Houston, followed by Michigan State and Auburn. You know, Michigan State had that really difficult beginning to the season. They kind of corrected themselves. One thing I think we do know is maybe that most fans don't give enough credit to Tom Izzo for being as great a coach as he is. He passed Bob Knight in all-time Big Ten wins in history this year. And not that Bruce Pearl isn't a great coach. Bruce Pearl's a great coach, too. But Tom Izzo is a tactician and is a handler of emotions, the reason that Michigan State has had so much success over the years. But it has been 25 years since they won a title, so I think that kind of hangs over his head. It's been he's been there a long time, and he had a taste, but again, quarter century ago. And Auburn with Johnny Broome, again, I said this yesterday, I'll say it again, when Johnny Broome and Auburn get running downhill, they are really, really hard to stop.
They are. And they're one of, you know, obviously those teams that, you know, score the most points in the country. They're averaging 85 of those, and they also don't turn the ball over very often, which was a little bit rare to see against, you know, in their first matchup in the regionals against Michigan, where they turned the ball over 15 times. I don't think that's something they can afford to do against a very defensive-minded, per usual, Michigan State team. But in that same breath, you know, they've got a lot of the size, talking about Auburn, second in the nation in blocks. And, you know, but Michigan State has some things going for themselves as well. Three-point shooting is definitely not one of them. So if there are situations where they're not shooting the ball well, they're one of the worst in college basketball in terms of perimeter shooting. But if they're looking to get some rebounds, then they're going to have to come off long. So that they can be able to get some of those quicker guards and maybe go into the chest of some of the Auburn bigs and, the you know, make them pick up some fouls. Michigan State's pretty good from the free throw line as well. And, I mean, to be a team that doesn't really have that kind of size, I mean, Michigan State is, you know, top 10 in the country in terms of rebounding. So, you know, one thing, and I don't know how much people buy stock into this or what have you, Tom Izzo, on top of all that resume, in NCAA tournaments is 10-0 against the SEC. And that should make it kind of interesting already within itself. Auburn's a really confident group, maybe a little overconfident, but they have a reason to be as the overall number one seed. And ironically and coincidentally enough, if Michigan State wins this game, they play another SEC team, I guess. So it should definitely make for a really interesting game, if I'm just being really transparent. I like this matchup, especially when Michigan State is in position to where they are the underdogs.
I mean, Michigan State, there, you could play three straight SEC teams. They could play Auburn and Florida and Tennessee. I mean, it's not out of the question. It seems to me, again, just one final point in this game, that the only way Michigan State is going to win this game is to muck it up. I mean, they got to make this an ugly game.
Sure.
They just got to get in there and make this an ugly, kind of dirty game. I'm not talking about playing dirty or fouling or stuff, but they just got to slow it down, and then they got to make it a physical game and then hope the referees allow them to play so they don't get in foul trouble.
Yeah. Can't turn the ball over if you're Michigan State, because it can get really ugly. Those first few rounds up through the Sweet 16, they didn't do a very good job of taking care of the basketball. And you've got to have very minimal miscues and mistakes, unforced errors and unforced turnovers and things like that. You got to be able to take care of the ball. So Michigan State's got the experienced guards to do it, but it's going to take a little bit more than just talking about it if they want to, you know, oversee this taller task, if you will.
Yeah, and they got to do it for all 40 minutes, because the second you let your guard down, you could do it for 29 minutes and you're going along great, and suddenly Auburn puts up, you know, 13 points in 90 seconds, and you're like, what happened there? You know, you went from a 2-point game to an 11, you know, up to down 11 in 90 seconds, and you went, wait, what happened there? So you got to, because, you know, basketball being a game of runs and whatnot. So as you look at it, who do you like today in these two games?
I like Michigan State in an underdog role in this situation. I just feel really confident about what Tom Izzo has been able to do in the month of March, which he's, primarily known for. That other one is tough, but I'm going to stick with what I had before. I took Houston to win the national championship, and I'm still going to continue to roll with Houston. I think that Kelvin Sampson is well overdue and certainly, you know, kind of an underrated coach, one of those teams that nobody really was given a shot at. Talking about Auburn and Duke and some of the other teams, Florida even jumped Houston. I think Houston is in good shape to still be considered, you know, a little bit of an underdog in such situations.
Okay, Michigan State, Auburn at State Farm Arena. The winner of that game will face Florida in the Final Four. Duke will face the winner of Tennessee and Houston in San Antonio in the Final Four. All right, Deshaun Tate is our basketball, college basketball guy. He's also our basketball expert. Hawks and Bucks tonight. Hawks have dropped a couple here, roller coasting around here at the end of the year. And what was, a lot of us hope would be kind of a locking down the 7 seed in the play-in might slide. If they're not careful, they could slide into 9-10. Is there something here at the end of the year that the Hawks need to do to try to make sure that they don't, find themselves, you're playing the Bucks tonight, you lose that one, you've lost three in a row, that they don't slide themselves into a 9-10?
Yeah, I think as far as the Atlanta Hawks go, I think that there's three key things I've been noticing that has been kind of trending over the course of, the entire season, to be honest with you. And, I know that a lot of times they want to go to the high-octane offense and high-volume shooting from the perimeter and all that good stuff, which I think is fine, but continue to work inside out. I call it hungry, hungry hippo. Make sure that you're feeding the big man. Make sure you're feeding the post. I know there's not a ton of them because Clint Capella's been out. Onyeka Okongwu getting inserted into that starting lineup has been good, but I think you kind of got to start out by going inside out, getting him some touches, and obviously Zachary Risacher has been growing up pretty quickly before our eyes, and especially being a team that scores as much as they do, predicated in the in the paint, being able to outscore some teams. So I think they got to start there, and then put Milwaukee Bucks on the free throw line. They're one of the worst free throw shooting teams in the in the NBA, and I think you just got to continue, if you're the Atlanta Hawks, to try and be better from the free throw line your own self, because there are way too many instances where we'll see them shooting sometimes around 70 something percent, maybe 72 here, 78 there. They'll give you some false hope sometimes when they're shooting in the 80s from the free throw line, but then they'll dip into the 50s and 60s, which I think is something that you cannot afford to do against a really good Milwaukee Bucks team. But continue to play really hard-nosed defense, and definitely got to get those turnovers under control, because you don't really have a lot of wiggle room or room for error, if you will, giving the ball away to the other team. I always tell people, John, is that before I – just willingly give the ball to the other team, I'm going to take a shot. Maybe it might be poor selection or what have you. We can work on that later and try and get guys to crash the boards. But I at least got to get a shot up to at least be able to give myself a 50-50 chance at making it, and then maybe getting a rebound versus just giving it to the other team. That's not going to be a good recipe for success if you're the Atlanta Hawks against a good defensive-minded Milwaukee Bucks
team. Does it surprise you? I want to go back to college basketball for a second. You're talking about Houston, best team in the Big 12, Michigan State, best team in the Big 10, Tennessee, Auburn, Florida, three best teams right there with Alabama in the SEC. Duke, of course, by unquestioned best team in the ACC. And then you look on the women's side and you have the same thing. You have all the number one seeds and the best teams in their respective conferences, whether it's South Carolina, USC, we're talking about all the top of the top here. Does it surprise you that college basketball, because I think that this is a trend here where my sense is in this new, where we're headed with college sports, that people ought to get used to the idea that the best teams are going to be the best teams and that Cinderellas are not going to happen at all often.
And there's some people that have some sour grapes or just gripes about, maybe not having that Cinderella this year. I think we saw some upsets, though. We saw McNeese and, we saw Colorado State. We saw Drake. Maybe those aren't your prototypical, upsets, if you will. There probably wasn't a Cinderella slipper. There haven't been as many buzzer beaters and everything else as we're accustomed to. But by this time, we end up seeing chalk on the regular anyways by the time you get to Sweet 16 and Elite Eight. So I don't think it's harming too much. I think people need to make a decision between what side of the fence they want to live on, because God forbid you get the Loyolas and George Masons and what have you in, and people are complaining about the viewership because you don't have the best teams. Well, now you get the best teams and you don't have some of those Cinderellas. Well, now people want to complain about you don't have the Cinderellas, and it's going away from the shock value of what March Madness is. So I think it just depends on where you live at, but always wanting to see the best brand of basketball being played, I think, is the most important thing. And I'm not in love with some of the blowouts that we've seen in the NCAA tournament at all. Of course, you're not going to hear many complaints around the Tate residence about any kind of basketball being played. But yet still, I still think that it's a good mixture. And sometimes it's okay to not have a ton of madness in March. which is perfectly fine. You know, you want to see some of the best teams playing. How about this, John? We still have that opportunity. Most people said that though at the beginning of the year, that was Tennessee. They held on to number one for about a month. Florida's been consistent all year long. People said the best team in the country was either Auburn or Duke. They're still playing in it. So I just challenge people to make up their minds and embrace the brand that's being played on the floor today and obviously next weekend in San Antonio.
Yeah, and that's what we had with the first college football playoff. You know, as we had all those blowouts in the opening round, and everybody said, oh, this is boring football here. And, you know, but, you know, let's see what happens today. We could have a couple of classic games, and then whatever shakes out today, at least on paper, when we go to San Antonio, it looks like it's going to be a hell of a Final Four. And the only caveat to that is Duke's now reached such a level, are they playing at such a level that nobody can play with them? That's the only caveat.
Yeah. Yeah, I can agree with that. And it'll be impressive if they are able to do such things, be that team that's standing on the ladder in San Antonio with the scissors in hand, because we haven't seen a team that's so predicated its success based off of its phenomenal freshmen and everything else since they did it. And that was a decade ago, as crazy as that is to maybe be able to believe that with, you know, obviously Jones and Okafor, Winslow and Grayson Allen. So again, I mean, it's phenomenal basketball. I think we're going to end up seeing some really grown up, upperclassmen in Houston that could be playing against a really young Duke team. Both of them, we got really good defense. And then, you know, obviously being able to see Florida against either one of these guys, being Auburn or Michigan State, could be a SEC matchup in the Final Four, or it could be the rematch of the 25 years later, you know, national championship game between Florida and Michigan State. So either way it goes, I think we're going to see great basketball. And I'll just remind you, because I heard you mention football, I always remind the people not to forget Sundays were made for selections. How about that, John? How you like that?
Well, we'll see if they got it all right, and they may have gotten it right with all the number one seeds on both the men's and women's. It's possible. All right, Deshaun Tate at Tate's Take Hoops. Thanks, Deshaun. I'll talk to you next week, and let's look forward to the Final Four.
Hey, sounds good. Thanks for having me.
All right, Deshaun. Deshaun Tate is our college basketball and basketball expert. Tate's Take Hoops, and he's been an invaluable resource, and I really appreciate him taking the time. All right, when we get back, one national pro football commentator might have started to be changing his tune about how he sees this situation with Kirk Cousins. Read it to you next. And Braves fans, I want to hear from you at 404-726-0929. 0-3, no big deal. It's 3 of 159. Or, not going to lie, you got a little concern about what's taking place in San Diego. John Fricke till 1 o'clock on Sports Radio 92 on the game.